Welcome back to the Mojo Podcast. Whether this is your first time or you're a regular listener, it's wonderful to have you here. And I wanted to say a special thank you that you've chosen to spend some time here in the year that we've had. I really hope these conversations have offered you something of value as we process the complexity of life and the changes we're all going through. Now, this is the final episode of the second series of the Mojo Podcast. It's been incredible. So many diverse, fascinating voices that have joined me in this series. So many incredible stories, with the unifying characteristic of people revealing their own Mojo stories, in turn offering inspiration, even support to you, the listener. Essentially, my small but deeply intentioned effort to bring some more positive stories to you all, especially in this year of 2020. So thank you to all those guests that have joined me, and thank you to you for listening. A new series is coming to you in mid-January with more amazing guests lined up, and more details of which I'll be releasing in the early new year. So watch out on Instagram. I have an incredible final episode for you today as I talk to Nadine Asmar from her home office in Beirut, Lebanon. Nadine is a resilient entrepreneur with an international experience of more than 20 years in business, strategy, and human capital development. She's led teams, launched brands, and worked in volatile markets. She believes in the importance of rebalancing the relationship between society and business, purpose and profit, individual and organization. There is no separation. As the poet Rumi says, you are not a drop in the ocean, you are the ocean in a drop. We cover a lot of ground, but in such a thoughtful way, you'll feel Nadine's empathy and hear her philosophy as the episode develops. We do talk about the catastrophic events of August this year, when a huge chemical dump blew up and took so many lives and destroyed lives and livelihoods in Beirut. Nadine offers her view on where Lebanon is right now, and a personal view on the resilience of a nation seemingly constantly on the receiving end. And this leads into her own personal story. And it's a highly emotive one involving devastating loss and the choices she was forced to make. The key one being that she refused to be a victim. Instead of thinking, why me? She chose to think, why not? In essence, she shares her own hero's journey, something that's often very much focused on men, but this is profoundly female. The search for her spark and her mojo. Now, to have someone of Nadine's caliber is such a privilege on the podcast, but to have someone willing to share such deeply personal and painful memories is really quite awe-inspiring. So thank you so much, Nadine. There's so much for all of us in this episode. Please do share it with friends, and by leaving a 5-star rating and writing a short Apple podcast review, you'll help more people not only discover the Mojo Podcast, but allow more people to hear this story. Okay, over to my conversation with Nadine Asmar. So welcome back to the Mojo Podcast, and I'm delighted to have my guest live from Beirut in the Lebanon. Welcome, Nadine Asmar. How are you today, Nadine?
I'm super great, Richard. Thank you so much for that time. Thank you for inviting me on your podcast.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on, and we've spoken a couple of times, and I've been really, really looking forward to getting you on the podcast. And I always start here. Talking about mojo. So how is your mojo out of 10 today, would you say, Nadine?
I think it would be probably an 8 out of 10. I just, it feels very exciting, emotional, a lot of gratitude of being witnessed with you here. And it feels super synced in with my gut and period I'm going through. As I told you in our chat, it's like a period of being open to express and share. And honestly, this morning was an opportunity to pause, breathe, and reflect till today. So, of course, it's not 10 out of 10 because I feel it's a path. I feel there's a certain tension and seeking to really feel it's super 100%. And so, yeah.
Does it ever, it sounds like you say it's a path, a journey perhaps that you're on with your mojo. Do you ever feel that it's really right up there, whether that be a 9 or a 10?
The mojo feels like, for me, when you say mojo, I'm thinking spark. I'm thinking moments in my life where I'm remembering it. I feel we have it all within us. So it's like, it's within our membrane. So remembering it from within. So I feel it when I'm connected to people in conversation and creating, co-creating, nurturing spaces for others to support each other. So I feel this is a peak, full presence. In deep presence, like Otto Schaman says, the future emerges and I feel super in my mojo. It feels like a compass saying I'm in the right place. I'm in my element. So yeah, this is where I feel it 10 out of 10, if you want, right, in these moments.
I love that, that sense of, yeah, in your element, in the right place, this kind of, as you say, this sort of compass point that mojo is to you, that you're in the right place for the right time. Is that fair?
In a sense, yes. It's the moment where time expands. And I love the fact that you have the butterfly as a symbol, because for me, mojo is a path. Doesn't mean it's a very easy path. So going from a caterpillar, which is ugly, it needs its time, it goes through pain. So getting to the mojo is also accepting, surrendering to that journey. So, but in that moment when we do, I feel time stops. It's like when I look at a butterfly, and that is a very strong symbol to me. We stop, we look at the butterfly flickering with its colors and lights and beauty, and it makes a perfect moment.
That's beautiful. That sense of time just being almost immaterial, of expanding. It sounds like those moments you are, and you used it, I think, when you were talking before about just being super present. What helps you do that? Just slow everything down, perhaps, and be super present.
I mean, obviously, especially this year, it's a super intense year. What helps me is being remembered and remembering others and myself, and could be a breathing, just even before coming to the call, having back-to-back calls, so just breathing, going out. Today is a sunny day, so just allowing the sun, looking at a green pine tree. Could be a music, a sound, a hug, depends, but at least just a moment of breathing, setting my intention, kind of, you know, when you're under a bell and you're saying, okay, I want to stop for a moment. Just feel it in my body, what's happening, and just noticing. Before, I used to be very tough on myself, this is not working, this is not, so right. That time where I'm stopping and just breathing, noticing it. So that's what I try to practice gradually and lately.
Fabulous. And look, you mentioned, you know, this has been an intense year. So this practice you're talking about sounds like, firstly, like an important, really important one, and a very healthy one. A very intense year for everybody. But I did want to just check in with how things are in Beirut right now, obviously reflecting back on the huge explosion in August and the devastation that it caused to lives. And I know people around you and in your family, and obviously the city itself. How are things now? How is Beirut recovering?
Thank you for asking. You know, when an individual collective goes through trauma, I feel we are globally going through it, and specifically Beirut. So since October or even before, we had the banking crisis. Okay, people are very resilient and wanting to find solution. I traveled to sort that. Some others found different solution. Then we got the political and social unrest again. Okay, adapt, try to find solutions or leave. So, you know, in traumas is, or we run and are proactive, or we're numb and saying, oh, it's okay. It's like sliding, going down the curve, descent, and not feeling it. So feeling numb and saying it's okay for many years. COVID, obviously, no need to, globally, we're going through that. Plus the August 4th blast. It's obviously, as you probably read, thousands died, hundreds of thousands displaced from their homes, lost jobs, So initially today, I feel we're partly numb and it's in the phase of numbness or proactivity, like, okay, I'm focusing on my work, for example. But there's a volcano of emotions, including, you know, being, it's like the feeling of being harassed, violated, but not able to say who and have someone accountable. So there's this feeling that is still there, yet numbed by all the survival mode. There's a lot of things in between brackets, the crisis emergency starting to happen, you know, all the help on closing homes, giving shelter, and, you know, the urgent, especially with winter. And from that point, it's a choice. So each individual is taking a choice. Do I want to react and keep on bringing the blast? So I'm talking the consequence of the blast politically, personally. Should I, as Lebanese, leave, as we usually do?
Right.
Should I stay and rebuild? Should I stay, but yet sit with it, notice? So there is a lot of decisions to be done. For me, there was a lot of deep emotional cleansing because I lost an uncle, friends, my parents' home got destroyed. So
yeah.
We've been delaying cleansing that history, ancestral history from my parents' home. So it was physically sorting what was left, throwing what is not anymore needed or destroyed, and keeping with us what's left. So there's a lot of deep levels things happening. And as for Lebanon today, I feel there's, going back to your question, there's a sense of one numbness, hopelessness. Some are staying because that's the only choice. Some are still hoping, so that's nice. And kind of grounding, let's say, rotating around what's essential. So family, that's what's keeping us. And maybe not other options. So yes, so we're into that. It's sad that nothing is, because we're tiny, yet is like a central nerve, global central nerve, where everything is happening here. So there's a lot of misperception or misinformation. So it's sad that it's not being, you know, dealt with, because every individual has the right to be, to become, and to belong. So we're called to leave our belonging, including myself and my son. So again and again and again. So I don't know if that's a short or long answer, but
it's a very, I think it's a very impactful one, a very heartfelt one, and you know, personally, hugely informative in terms of the. And I know you're very clear. You're not speaking on behalf of a country or a city. You're someone that lives in the city. But I hugely respect your view and sharing what you are seeing, and this sense of what I picked up on there is this kind of choice, perhaps, that people have even in the depths of this despair. And you outlined what a particularly, and use the word intense, a particularly intense year that Lebanon has had, with everything that's gone on. But this sort of is it flight or flight, run, numb, as you said, this, the option to leave. So for you, is that an option? Is it like, you know what, everything just keeps happening here, I tried, but you know, maybe it's best if I just go somewhere else. Is that a thought, an option?
I'm going through, I mean, for the past years, but particularly this year, like, yes, it is an option as of awakening, because I traveled and lived for like 20 years away, and say, acknowledging what I like about the country, but kind of separating myself of what is not me. So what I relate to, what is not. So being here, I need a plan. I'm not on my own. I have a son who's now nearly 13 years old, so, and my parents of a certain age. So to take that step, especially with the global also crisis, is not an easy one. Some say jump, great, but there is so much to look into it. In the same time being here, I'm noticing also things I don't like about the country reflects as a reflection of me too. So I'm not separating. I'm trying to work on that. Leaving, right. Even if I leave or stay, I feel I need to work on that.
Right. I mean, that sounds like almost you're taking on a sense of responsibility. Is that what's going on for you? That, you know, I could just put this all behind me, but I'm part of this. So I have a part to play. Is that what you're saying?
Definitely. I mean, I could pretend and say today I'm helping XYZ program, or I'm helping the Red Cross on designing a livelihood program. So finding meaning and purpose and responsibility and respond proactively. So because I believe everyone, we have the ability, we've been numb, we've been saying it's okay. Yet when it stops being responsible to when it starts to be being free. But free from inside, not just free, okay, fleeing, but free. So yes, it's an option, but I'm not running into it. I feel maybe I'm mistaken, maybe not. It needs its time to be paved. I mean, I could be anywhere since most of the things I'm doing currently are online.
Right.
But I feel there's more internal work. And trying to help on the ground while I'm here and with my parents reconstructing their home and so on.
Right. Yeah. So there's a lot of, as you say, this, it sounds like you're taking on this the personal responsibility for self-growth and then, you know, obviously for family responsibilities, but also the regrowth of the country, which it sounds to me like you want to be part of as much as you can. And I know it's a incredibly complex political situation, particularly in the Lebanon.
Yeah, and there's a thread of wanting to be free and start fresh. So yes, there's a decision to make.
Yeah, that must be a difficult internal dialogue, perhaps that you're going from. How do you work through that?
To be honest, I'm not sure I'm giving it space, and I feel and hopeful with the Christmas spirit coming in. To give it space. I think it's happening unconsciously in conversation with others. For some reason, I'm not super proactive on it, but I feel it's time. I have set myself a deadline on it. I started small steps, baby steps. I'm following my pace. I'm not rushing it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've, as we spoke before, you've been on something of a hero's journey, as we would call it, for some time. There's been lots of things that have gone on in your life, and we're going to talk about some of those where you've perhaps lost your spark or your mojo in the past. Could we reflect back on some of the things that have happened for you that probably set up who you are right now?
Sure. First, and I think that many would relate to it, when we say our hero or heroiness journey, referring to Joseph Campbell or, to Maureen Murdoch. When the first time I was asked this question, I was like, me? Why? Why me or who me? But when I thought of it and learned more about it, I thought that I accepted that we are all on our hero's own hero's journey, own lives. And I'm saying this just to, it's a, as a way to justify why I'm having that space to share my journey, probably. But I realized that when sharing it, it's saying we're not alone on it. So also it's a way, and I'm grateful for you because it offers me the space to reflect where I am today. And also a sense of saying, if I'm leading my journey so I can decide rather than be the victim of what's happening to me. And with the hope that even today, especially today with you, by sharing, it might encourage, it might help someone, or it might help other people. It could be a word, could be a sentence, could be something to reflect on. All this to justify why I'm sharing my journey.
You talked about you said about, you know, being a victim, and I think that's a really powerful area, obviously, that we can feel that the world is, you know, doing things to us that we don't deserve to happen. And you can take on that mentality, that
that narrative of the victim, and often quite understandably.
Starting what you said about from where the victim feelings comes in, if you want. So it might take, I might take you to my childhood if you're okay with that.
Yes, and, absolutely. And then, we'll go back to the source. Yes.
This is what came up to me this morning when reflecting. So, you know, as a woman, and especially born in this part of the world, I'm blessed with great parents. But growing up as a child, who's always, we're all born, I think, with a thirst to smile, to love, to climb, to hide. And I had all of this. But what affected, if you want, the starting point of the victim was being a sensitive kid too, being surrounded by a perfectionist aunt. And my grandma was sick for many years. So there was always like, stay quiet, don't bother. What you're going to say is wrong. So and the war we had going through, so just be invisible. And I found myself growing up through arts and sports and observing others and listening to others and trying to help. Yet, of course, this I am maybe not only the winter, but I would say part my the shadow of ours. So the spark I feel is this kid, this playful climbing kid who's loving and making others smile. So I know when my mojo is there, I feel that playing or allowed to play. And growing up, when looking at, if you want, from the journey, what kind of initiated that is realizing that that's not serving gradually, but it was still unconscious. And it happened firstly by breaking my view of the society as is. So it started by, you know, I wanted to help others. When you volunteer, you think, it's not as a utopic organization. So you start to look in and say, okay, I need to work on myself. So it got me from outer being there, observant, passive, to saying, I need to work on myself to help the others. And this got me to realize also, going into the multinational world, traveling. So I've built, if you want, this carapace, the shield, this, you know, in patriarchal culture where you have a role, you have a position, growing in multinational, title, money, recognition of contribution,
status.
Of numbers, status, status, exactly. But I found here my soul, and I get to my husband because it's all I feel everything builds up to that moment, is I found my soul drying out and dying, because the more you're in a multinational, I felt sexual harassment was okay, bullying was okay. For me, I found my source, my mojo, when I was helping the team, Salesforce, that was badly, let's say, treated, to be well-treated, to find their motivation, their own mojo, or at least. And this is gradually was like a call, awakening, because I saw the human wasn't there. It was more profit and ego and who talks louder. And it doesn't resonate with me. But I didn't have the confidence or the chance to say, hey, I don't want that anymore.
Right. And that lack of confidence, do you think that played back to when you talked about, you know, the little girl growing up in Beirut, stay quiet, be invisible? Those were linked?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Because you have many stereotypes of you grew up there, or you're a girl, or you're not, you know, the one that would step on others. It probably is the wrong expression, just to make it happen.
Yeah.
It doesn't resonate with me. And so it's a build up to the moment where I met him, where he emanated the opposite of all of this.
Your husband, so, this is.
Yes, yes, Allah. So he used to travel a lot, and he was a free spirit, an entrepreneur. So we started traveling. We lived in Japan, Singapore, New York, Greece, Lebanon. And what was super inspiring, he used to work in energy service, so with Japanese. So, and when I met him, so I stopped I said, stop, I don't want to be in that multinational world. I want to be with him and take the time to search for my mojo, for my purpose. And he was quite inspiring in a sense of whenever you saw him, he was always positive. If he had a question, he would go to someone. So, you know, again, the fear of expression, of being judged, yeah. he didn't have it because he didn't grow into the corporate world. He was like, I don't know this. I'll talk to XYZ and I'll say, I don't know.
A natural collaborator, you know, as entrepreneurs are, I've got to go and find this answer, find someone who can help me out with this.
Exactly. And with a super great heart, always smiling and staying free. So he always found that balance of staying free and helping others. So that was quite inspiring. He used to push me why don't you do this? But I had to, there was my over procrastinating analytical side that stopped me. But I guess the awakening happened when I was badly shaken by at that moment where 3 weeks after my son Alexei is born in Greece, Alain was in Bhutan and dies on the spot.
Oh, my word.
So obviously this is where you get pushed. I don't know, Stephen Mitchell said, when a master runs into difficulty, you stop and give into it. So I don't think we have a choice. We cannot just cling into our comfort. So that moment, all the planning got choked. So it's like, I cannot take any more my time. I cannot stay my own shadow. I was in my comfort zone of being at service of, but I had my son Alexei in the hands. So before he died, we had plans to go on vacation. So I was going into the mother, the woman, the one, the assistant at his work that had everything ready. But when he's not anymore here, so I had my son, a team of engineers in Asia and GCC to manage, a hurricane of emotion. And yet, if we go back to trauma, and I'm realizing today is like the survival instinct of numbness and overactivity to make it happen, to survive it.
So you're saying you're dealing with obviously the unbelievable news that your husband's passed away. You've got a 3-week-old baby in your arms, but you're also that people from your husband's old company were kind of looking to you for, right, what do we do now?
Exactly, because there was the parents, there's the of course the client, there was 7 people in China and different site work, and there was me. And so I had to leave Greece, come back to Lebanon, deal with all the legal and fight for, you know, being the creator and guardian of my son, because being a woman, you need to do that.
That's just not an automatic thing. Oh my word.
No, it's not. So you need to, you need to ask, you need to fight sometimes. And it's delicate because, it's super delicate. And for someone who's not used to saying, I want, had to. So I moved from being just a mom in the shadow to being the father and mom, the single widow, to be the driver and not the, you know, the co-pilot. I'm okay, I'll put the music on. And I didn't want to be boxed in the social, you're a widow or you're a single mom, you should get married now. Or why don't you go into the banking, something safe? And for me to keep his light was saying no to that. It was saying, I used to say, no, why me? And I want to practice, why not? Doesn't mean it's always comfortable, but it's why not? He was optimist. He was trying many things. Why not? So if I want to keep that light and give meaning to that light, this is how I'm living it currently and saying that's, I chose to choose that, but doesn't mean it's always, it needs courage. It doesn't mean every day is a fun, light and easy one.
This, as a refusal to be the victim, so not the why me question, but why not? And then what might happen, I suppose, which comes out of that, that was your and decision, you're back to choice. You chose, this is what I'm going to do, rather than have it imposed on you.
True. And on the way, obviously, what helps is some mirrors and companions that you meet, some mentors that kind of say, kind of flag it if I do, because yeah, we have our own pattern of behaving and thinking, or even the language that I used about myself. So having people helped me to stay on it. So one was meeting, if you want, because I wanted to leave home and own my space, because I was working from home and the kid and parents and so on. So I went to an incubator, got selected to a Mowgli mentoring program. And this is where I got triggered, and a lot in the program resonated well for me. Again, going back to, as entrepreneurs or leaders of our life, you're not alone. You have a companion, a nurturing, safe environment to pave your own way without restriction by what society would see it as fit or put you in that box. So, and thankfully too, if you want the facilitate assignment there, Tony, the founder, who really believed in me, because I could have let go of saying, no, yeah, I'm not good enough. But they believed and kept me going. And of course, you know, our common friend, Richard, with whom I kicked the first magical experience. And that gave me confidence to stay on it and grow. And I'm eternally grateful for all of them.
So this coming together with Mowgli mentoring sounds like it was a really pivotal point for you to give you that support. As you say, people help. These were your allies, cheerleaders in your corner at a time where, I guess, the rest of society was, as you say, trying to box you. This is how you should be now as a widow, single mother. But you, with this help, with this support, you're able to break out of that and set your own path.
True, and doesn't mean it came easily, because you might have some challenging relationship, being asked for the first time to share your journey while you're used to observing and listening others was an amazing. But because I felt there was trust and love and in the circle, that I was able to do this. And you know, I've always had thirst, even on my learning. So 20 years later, I understand why I chose my BA or my MBA. So I did a BA in social anthropology because I didn't relate to money and power. But now I see how I enjoy these multicultural experiences and circle and unique conversation. And I'm finding it across the region, MENA, Sub-Saharan Africa, Europe, diversity. So that by itself, you can hear from my voice and excitement, is something that kicks my mojo, my energy, and find myself in the right place.
And I'm getting, you know, you talked about the butterfly, which obviously the symbol of this humble podcast, but I'm really getting this sense of your, you know, your development over that time. It sounds like, you know, where you went from, you know, as you say, in that kind of corporate environment, rather soulless or soul destroying by the sounds of it, to really moving. And that obviously it took perhaps a horribly tragic event to maybe even shift that faster than maybe it ordinarily would have happened. And here you are in a circle of support and working with people, being mentored and then mentoring back.
Exactly, which gave me also the confidence and say, I started a new regional consultancy firm with exceptional people, whereby I was exploring. So a couple of years back, I wouldn't have done that. And I went to on that journey. On that, I started to say, I like or dislike that. I started to try to listen to what my inner voice is saying, because even go through that, you start to notice what works, what's not. And to have integrity with ourselves, to, between brackets, break or separate from old relationships and have the strength to do so, and creating new ones. So doesn't make it easy, because yes, before, it's rational decisions of growing and paving your way. and wanting to create impact around you with leaders and, you know, around finding meaning in all of this, but also the courage to say no of what's not resonating, even if on paper it makes sense. So, and some people didn't understand it, including my family.
How was that conversation then with the family? I'm sure it wasn't one conversation, but over a period of time, because there were, I guess, some cultural expectations on one side, and then the things that you were looking to do on the other side. How did you work through that?
So, to be honest, they've been super supportive emotionally, and they're there, if you want, with my son and so on. What was difficult, and if you think of the journey, a difficult thing for me was not a conflict, but an openness and maturity in my relationship with my mother specifically. After the death of my husband, after a couple of years, I opened up to a relationship and I got even engaged. Mm-hmm. And we broke up again. So, of course, it was super painful. And a great learning. I can analyze for many years reason why it happened, but it came at the time where the girl and woman in me started to express her needs and wants and thirst to evolve in relationship and in myself. And some people were not used to this. So they were like, why are you angry? Why are you saying no? Why you're not stay accepting things and saying that's enough? And it took time, and this is partly of, in a way, destructuring, dismembering, so from my mother's past, from what is enough for her and what is enough for me, with all the love in the world. But it at a certain point you feel alone in that, you doubt yourself again. And then asking myself, okay, if I'm at peace with this, then that could be a good space to learn from it and renew. And even my relationship got deeper, more open. I feel maybe it's also hopefully a healing of her past, my past, and hopefully the present.
Generational norms, I guess, that could just get passed on. This is just the way it is, and so that's enough for this family, you know. Why isn't that enough for you? I guess that's a really big question to ask, and a very deep and complex area to get into, because you're kind of saying that may have been okay for you, but it's not okay for me, and this is why.
Doesn't mean I have clarity on that's why I said the mojo purpose is a journey.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it's clear what is, but being open rather than, you know, adding boxes. And you get to a point where, okay, you said yes and no, and I'm thankful I've been resilient and perseverant. And this is where you notice I cannot stay where how I was in the multinational world. I'm driven by creating impact, and the impact is in the heart, not in the form. So it's time also, and that's why you asked me in the beginning, am I giving myself time to hear my inner voice, to listen to my inner voice? And I feel now is the right time to listen to it. So bringing the heart and the mind and the body in coherence doesn't mean it's for granted something easy and doable every day, but a practice.
Yeah.
So that's, if you want, what I'm trying today to keep on doing it. So all that, I feel that journey can happen at the same time or across years as a spiral of going deeper and deeper of what it means and what I'm noticing.
Yeah. And how, let's talk a bit about what I know you're involved in lots of different areas in terms of coaching, leadership development, mentoring, being a champion of women in business in Lebanon. What's driving you forward in all of that? Obviously there's work going on in yourself, but it's clear to me that you want to make an impact as well.
So definitely. So a couple of years back, starting to work with a lot of impact ventures and social entrepreneurs and so on, I feel driven, and that's what I mean. I've done many volunteer and for work in MENA, and even with IESH Social Business School in Portugal. I've done a lot of coaching and creating a nurturing environment where they don't feel alone. So that feeling of community helps them to last, to stay connected again, because many programs or experiences disconnect the mind from the heart, the purpose from, if you want, the performance and so on. So I'm driven to creating that space to listen to it, to get it expressed, hopefully with creating more impact holistically. So we can, we say fulfill our potential, but in a sense of being with ourselves in order to see. So we it becomes like mirrors to each other and saying, oh, this is what, how I'm showing up. So how do I want to become? What do I want to become? How and who? And that be a space where you're not alone. So I've been doing this, and that's why I got a, I'm proud of getting a scholarship from the INSEAD on that. And I went through, I've been doing this since then. So bringing, if you want, bridging the leadership side, and the more I learn, work on myself, the more I like to share, along with how on in practical on the ground for an entrepreneur executive, it can be translated. So it's not only theory or ideas, but how it can be translated on the ground.
Got it.
To make the change, to make the impact they wish.
Got it. And how would you, you know, bringing it back as on the ground in the Lebanon, how is it being a woman in business or a female entrepreneur there now? I appreciate this year has been, as you say, intense, but are things improving? Are there more opportunities?
To be honest, for me today in Lebanon, men or women, it's the same. Plus in rural areas specifically, you would have more challenge of sustaining your initiative. We're trying to help. And this is, I mean, the idea is not to be limited to here, but connecting to the world. That's why. And I see this with women and men across the region, in a sense of, so it's quite difficult for sure to survive. That's why innovation, connecting to the global digitalization does help. But I don't feel it can happen while working individually. That's why I'm part of, a group of women. But also, I don't like to say, I'm not a feminist. So I, for me, is helping them to have their rights and build their competence. But connecting all with all, men with women, integrating that. And also, so for them to survive in this period or sustain, I feel individually it doesn't work. It needs to be a collective support. And that's a challenge, to be honest, in a sense of, in a mode of survival, in a culture of where there have been some splits. There are some initiatives to collaborate, but it's a work in progress. There's a lot of history and scars that affects it. So I strive for the collective, for the collaboration beyond competition. And it's not, I mean, especially in survivor mode, is not always possible, but at least aspire to.
Yeah. And it sounds like from what you were saying that encouraging the collective when you're mentoring a group or facilitating a group, sounds like there's a lot of joy in that for you, from what's coming through. A lot of, as you say, if there's impact happening, is that, can you feel in those moments, is that when you can feel your mojo climbing, out of interest?
So definitely when in collective, it's like an opportunity to, one, witness each other by the mere fact that we're not here in a rational mode delivery. Give me the money, give me the strategy, give me a solution. But we're allowing each other to unpause, witness each other. Like even today, what you're doing with me, is witnessing, seeing me, and I'm feeling you, seeing me, seeing you. So that exchange has a humongous power, even in its silence, of saying you exist, I accept you. I'm learning from you. Doesn't mean I'm better or worse, but it's the richness of the collective emotion, experience, intelligence, and not feeling alone. So saying, oh, there's a chance, there is hope. And so when I drop or they feel hopeless or giving up, again, you're not alone. You have a mentor. You have a group next to you. You need the competence, that it's there. You need the experience is there. The network is there. So, of course, again, we need to reach out, activate it, maintain it. We're human, so we can get caught up in many things. But at least that's the aspiration.
Yeah.
Of being present and practicing this together.
What advice would you give on that way of being that you talk about? I love that, you know, the collective witnessing who are around you, in that there's a lot of respect in that versus somehow I think, as you say, more corporate environments can be very transactional, which can lead to a lot of the bad of patriarchal behavior, which we're all aware of. But if you were talking to someone who is in a corporate environment, what advice would you give to them to feel their potential, to realize their mojo, to increase their mojo? Because, you know, we don't all have a choice, I guess, to exit out and do our own thing and be entrepreneurs, and we may feel a little bit stuck. What advice would you give people?
Advice. What's coming up is more a question. It's more what would make them spark, what they aspire to as a human being beyond their work, who they want to become, what impact they want to create. What would make them feel free, not only responsible? That's a question for me. And in conversation last time with a friend, is like, yeah, with Richard, is like, you're responsible, but what's the balance between being responsible and free? So it's more giving the other the space to think, because if you're told, I'm not very much into advice. If you tell them, why don't you do this? Come to that experience. I feel it's a mind-to-mind conversation. So for me, it would be maybe creating the space for them to reflect and what they need. Maybe so many times I feel there's no chance, there's no space for that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I feel offering that space to reflect on that, and then their choice, what they want.
Yeah, now those are some fantastic questions in there. Into what would make you feel more free? What would make you feel free is a wonderful question to just think on. That we don't. When do we ask ourselves that question? Not often enough. Focus slightly forward now on the future, and as you say, you're doing a lot of work on, you know, yourself and where you are. And this, as you say, it's not an event. This is an ongoing path that you've chosen. But where would you like to be? What would you like the future to hold?
Very interesting question. Probably, I mean, in space and time, more expanding in the sense of connected globally, not limited. I always had this, so not limited geographically. Hopefully, and more creating impact around by allowing, again, maybe it's repetition, by allowing that space for a collective healing, a collective nurturing environment for each to find ourselves and design or draw what we wish to be for each other. So probably co-designing my becoming with the others and presence with each other. So not limited. I don't have a clear say as I used to do before. It's like, I want to get to that position. I want to create that impact. So this is for today what I have in mind, what I would say.
That's a lovely ambition. That's, as you say, it's not a boxed ambition, as I think you've been looking to escape being put in boxes for an awfully long time. It's a lovely, free and flowing ambition. And I'm sure on that path it's full of opportunity to keep, rediscover, spark and mojo as you go. So lovely to hear that. Nadine, well, thank you so much. I'm very thankful of your time. I always finish by asking about kind of what things, habits you're doing daily to keep your, as you call it, your spark, your mojo flowing. And you've talked to some of them, you know, this breathing, sun, being around good people. Is there anything else that comes to mind for you that you think, yeah, I really need to do this to keep myself where I want to be?
So a definite walk in nature with a lovely open-hearted friend, or even on my own. What I would add, probably when possible, playing basketball with my son, or as simple as a hug with a popcorn on, just to relax. Other than this is remembering to breathe. And I'm thanking you because you're helping me practice this today with you.
Oh, thank you. I really enjoyed the conversation, Nadine. Really loved it. Got so much from it. And I'm sure everyone listening will as well. And thank you for just, you know, for what you've brought, the level of reflection and honesty and openness is wonderful. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Richard, for that. This is a beautiful chance to be witnessed in my total honesty and as I am showing up today with you.
What an amazing way to end the second series of the Mojo podcast. I'm so thankful to Nadine for joining me and being so open and that level of honesty that she speaks to there. Because as she says, there needs to be a collective effort now. And by having the courage to be so open, to be so honest, to share her story, she is saying that we and you are not alone on our own journeys, going through whatever we're going through, rediscovering our spark or our mojo. I'm struck and I'm in awe of her courage in the face of horrendous circumstances, but she refuses to be put in a box and to accept the often well-intentioned, but for her, limiting status of victim. And that shows the real depth of her courage. In the year we've all had, it's easy to think that we are victims of circumstance, that all of this has been done to us. And I truly hope this episode perhaps helps you think slightly differently about that. Now, it's not about ignoring or belittling the pain, grief, and trauma, the loss of loved ones, of jobs and opportunities, but it's about remembering we all have a choice on how we are and how we see our situation. If you do nothing else with this episode, take the time to ask yourself at the end of this strangest of all years, what will make you feel free? It's an amazing question to use to focus on the year ahead. And with that, I wish you and your families the happiest and healthiest of festive seasons possible, and a truly transformative 2021. Until we meet again here in mid-January 2021, I hope your mojo continues to flow.